Okay, thank you, Cindy. As Cindy mentioned, this is the master's thesis work of my student, Jason Cavadini, who, with his new job, was not able to be here today. So it is very similar in structure to the talk that you heard just two talks ago by my other student, Kalissa Horton. So cover crops have a lot of benefits. We've heard a lot about those today. I'm not going to go through those. Jason's work really focused primarily on those top two bullet points, scavenging nutrients and minimizing runoff and erosion. So that was really the focus of his work. Oilseed radish is a relatively popular cover crop, newly popular cover crop in particularly the eastern part of the Corn Belt, Ohio and Indiana. It's popular for a number of reasons. It's abundant leaf tissue above ground. It has a large tuber below ground. It provides a little bit of biological tillage, which you can see there, the root mound around that tuber, so doing a little bit of tillage of the soil itself. It does winter kill, which can be a benefit for many farmers who don't want to have to deal with killing a cover crop in the spring. And it has a low carbon nitrogen ratio, which means it's going to decompose quickly, so it won't tie up nitrogen. Jason focused on the phosphorus story, whereas Kalissa was focusing on the nitrogen story. Some work by Ray Weil and his colleagues showed that oilseed radish can increase available soil phosphorus over time. Part of that is because of the phosphorus that's stored in the tissue in the fall and released during the decomposition, of course, of the radish cover crop, and then some other hypotheses put forth by them and others about other ways that soil phosphorus may become more available with a cover crop like radish. There are some challenges with the radish. Certainly a large portion of the nutrients are going to be released at the soil surface, as would be the case for many cover crops where if they're not tilled into the soil. The combination of biotillage by the tuber as well as the rapid decomposition may end up leaving fields susceptible to erosion and to nutrient losses. So we need to take a look at some best management practices so that we can get the benefits of the radish cover crop and try to mitigate as many of those challenges as we can. And so that's basically what Jason's work was about. So he also looked at the same two cereal crops that Kalissa reported on a couple of talks ago. Oats have some nice benefits that might be matching with our radish or be complementarity to our radish. They establish quickly in the fall, provide abundant above ground biomass, have fibrous roots. They also winter kill, which again, for those farmers who want winter kill, that's a benefit. But they have a higher carbon nitrogen ratio certainly than the radish, so that's going to lead to slower decomposition. And then cereal rye, which does not establish as quickly as oats in the fall. It also has fibrous roots. It survives over the winter and also has a higher carbon nitrogen ratio and so will be slower to decompose than the radish. So the idea was to look at bicultures, which is just mixing two cover crop species. The idea was to mix the radish with a cereal crop that decomposes more slowly than the radish, and would that also potentially hold some of the biotilled soil from the radish and reduce the potential for erosion as well as slow down the release of nutrients from the radish. So the specific questions Jason was asking are, could planting the oilseed radish in a biculture help to retain the released phosphorus from the radish? And could that biculture also affect the amount of soil phosphorus that would be available to the subsequent cash crop? Does the biotillage by the radish result in soil or phosphorus losses? And could a biculture help mitigate those losses? The experimental design was essentially the same as what Kalissa just reported. Groundhog variety oilseed radish. Two bicultures, the radish oats and the radish rye, and the seeding rate for the radish in those bicultures was half of what it was when it was radish by itself in order to leave space in the mix for the cereals. And in a no-cover crop control, three replications in our randomized complete block design. Again, four locations. The first three you see were planted. The cover crop was seeded at the end of August of 2011. Fall sampling was done in the late fall, and then spring sampling in early spring, again the drought year of 2012, an early spring season. And then his fourth site was actually seeded in mid-September and sampled in late fall, and that was not sampled in the spring. Today we're only going to look at just a few pieces of data from his thesis. So the specific objectives were to measure the cover crop biomass for both phosphorus uptake and dry matter production, to measure the soil phosphorus at various times and row positions and depths, to observe subsequent corn yields, which we're not going to talk about today, and then to determine if the bicultures could decrease the amount of erosion and phosphorus loss compared to the radish itself. So the biomass sampling is illustrated here. They used 0.25 meter squared frames and basically cut all the above ground growth. Also sampled the roots that included the radish tubers as well as the roots down to a depth of about 20 centimeters in part of that frame. And all roots and shoots were analyzed. The roots, obviously, there's a lot of work getting to the point of getting them clean so that you could then analyze them for dry matter and phosphorus content. So when you go out into a cover crop field, of course, the first thing that we notice is the above ground vegetation, but we all know that there's a lot going on below ground too. So what Jason was trying to illustrate here was simply, Cindy, I'm having trouble. Where is the mouse? Is there a mouse?
There is no mouse.
There is no mouse. Okay, never mind. Okay, so on the left-hand side, basically we've got the biomass dry matter being presented for the three different cover crop treatments, and the bottom bar on each of those is the radish shoots. The gray bar is the radish tuber. The bright blue bar there is your cereal shoots, okay, so the rye or oat shoots. And that's probably where most of us stop most of the time, and that's certainly where I stop most of the time. But sometimes we go ahead and we sample the cereal roots as well, and so the top bar there is adding that biomass production. So the left-hand graph is the biomass, the right-hand graph is the biomass phosphorus content. So again, just to remind us that when we're looking at these bicultures, and it's very tempting if you do work on radishes to sample the tuber because it's right there and you can see it and it's sticking above the ground, half of it. And if we do that, we need to remember that we need to sample the cereal roots as well. So 25 to 35% more dry matter and phosphorus content in the bicultures than in the radish treatment alone. This next slide is illustrating two things. If you take a look at the green on the top and the table on the top, this is the radish rye mix. And what he's illustrating here is that the biomass, the dry matter in the spring at 1926 kilograms per hectare was very similar to the biomass in the fall. So basically saying that the radish rye treatment, because the rye regrows in the spring, is able to maintain similar dry matter and similar phosphorus in the above ground portion as the radish rye mix in the fall, which was dominated by the radish. The other thing Jason wanted to take a look at is you could see that lower photo there. He was calling that the biomat. The radish in early spring, the leaves have shriveled up, but they're still all there. It's quite a network, actually. And a lot of the tubers are halfway out of the ground. I call them freeze-dried because they're kind of like freeze-dried. And so he went ahead and sampled that biomat. He sampled all the leaf material as well as whatever part of the tuber was sticking up above the ground. And you can see the bars on the left-hand side there showing the dry matter, the black bar, the dry matter, the gray, the tissue phosphorus for the radish itself, and then those the other two sets of bars showing the radish oats and the radish rye. So about 50 to 75% less of this rapidly decomposing residue at the soil surface in the bicultures. And, of course, part of that is because the radish was seeded at half the rate because we had cereal in there as well. But the point being that we have less of this rapidly decomposing material where you have the radish mixed with something else. Okay, for his soil phosphorus sampling, background samples were taken prior to cover crop seeding. He did sample that root mound that you saw in that one photo right around the tuber, sampled three different times, two row positions. The green area there shows you the root zone, basically right next to the tuber. The blue area was essentially what he called the buffer zone, which was halfway between drilled strips. So basically sampling right next to the tuber and halfway between drilled rows at three different depths. Note these depths are different than the ones Kalissa was talking about. The phosphorus sampling depths were more shallow because phosphorus tends to move less than nitrogen, but similar sampling distances from the tuber. He then analyzed water-soluble P and malic 3P, and we're only going to present some of the malic 3, your available soil test P. Okay, so this was one of the sites, and if we the two graphs there are the root zone on the left and the buffer zone on the right. The root zone, we have three bars here for fall of 2011, and the point on all of the bars on this graph are that the first point is that phosphorus was higher near the surface and got progressively lower as you went deeper into the soil. Okay. The second point is if you look at in the root zone, if you look at fall 2011 versus spring 2012, there's a little asterisk there saying that at that 0 to 2.5 centimeter depth, that top inch, there was an increase in available phosphorus at that top inch in the root zone from fall to spring, whereas there was no change from fall to spring at the other depths. In the buffer zone, however, there was no such change in available phosphorus in the soil from fall to spring. So again, right next to the tuber, right near the surface, your available phosphorus is changing, presumably due to the decomposition of the tuber. This particular graph happens to be from another site, but is illustrating basically when you average across the three radish treatments, radish alone, radish oat, radish rye, and you average across the fall and the spring. And so you really concentrate here on looking at the root zone, the three bars to the left, versus the buffer zone, the three bars to the right. The surface two depths had greater concentrations of phosphorus in the root zone than did the buffer zone. So again, right next to the tuber, the top two depths had higher concentrations than away from the tuber, again reflecting that tuber decomposition and release of phosphorus. Jason also did some rainfall simulation work. This was somewhat of a last-minute addition, so unfortunately we only did this once, and so it would need to certainly be repeated, but it's some interesting initial data. 70 millimeter per hour rainfall rate. Runoff was sampled every 5 minutes for 30 minutes of runoff, and samples were analyzed for sediment and total phosphorus and dissolved phosphorus. So if we take a look at this table, we've got basically there's very little statistically significant differences, reflecting in part that we only have three replications. But you can see that the radish rye treatment had a tendency to be lower in phosphorus concentrations, to be lower in sediment load, and to be lower in phosphorus loads than the other two treatments that had radish. So again, by having rye, that living cereal cover in the spring, it lowered those concentrations and losses compared to the other two radish treatments. If you look at the no-cover crop control, the one that particularly stands out is the dissolved phosphorus. Again, not significantly different in concentration, but significantly different in load because, of course, there was no vegetation on the soil surface there. So what we're showing here is that the rye with the radish really reduces those concentrations and loads, or has a tendency to. Again, it would need to be repeated compared to where you have those other radish treatments. So, conclusions, the bicultures can provide more dry matter and phosphorus uptake than the radish alone, and they resulted in less rapidly decomposing residue at the surface. Cover crops accumulated soil phosphorus, near the roots and at the soil surface. They did not provide a significant phosphorus benefit to the succeeding crops. But they also were not detrimental to soil phosphorus, at least over the time period of this study. And mixing cereal rye with the radish can decrease soil and phosphorus losses, or at least has a tendency to do that. The suggestions are that cover crops should still be planted for their many other benefits to soils, but planting cover crops for a phosphorus benefit may not be practical. It's possible that it could provide a phosphorus benefit on soils that had a lower fertility status, but we did not test that. But certainly we would recommend that radish should be mixed with something else, like a cereal crop, to reduce soil and phosphorus losses and to maximize biomass production. So thank you very much.
You're running away. We had time for a question.
Oh. If it's too hard of a question, I'm going to give it to Kalissa.
Okay. Any questions?
I'm wondering what. Sorry. It appears that you're getting lower loads and lower concentrations of phosphorus when you don't have a cover crop, which seems kind of
In this case, no cover crop had no cover, including weeds. And so sometimes what you're talking about, soluble phosphorus, you do leach some material out of residues that are on the surface. So again, I would point out this is a half an hour rainfall once. But that's, I think, probably what's happening there is when you have no vegetation on the surface, at least for an initial rainfall, there's nothing to leach out of the residue. It doesn't mean there isn't any on the soil, and that with time you might see that. But from an initial rainfall and runoff of it, I think the surface residue is pretty sustained.
Thank you. And thanks to all the speakers this afternoon for a very interesting session. You can go home now.